Tonight I'm continuing our series of lessons on the science of the Christian life. About four or five weeks ago, I taught a couple of Wednesday nights on the science of marriage, and I announced that I was going to teach another one, and I'm going to do that tonight. I really believe tonight that if you will listen carefully, I believe that you will, you young couples especially, could have your entire marriage helped, salvaged. I really want you to hear me carefully. In 1 Peter chapter 3 is my verse tonight, or my scripture. We're going to read several scriptures. We'll start off with 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may be without the word, be won with the conversation of the wives. Now that word conversation means all manner of speaking. The way you speak with your voice, the way you speak with your life. But it does mean conversation as we mean conversation, but it also means the every way you speak. All right? Verse 2, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair, and of wearing of gold, or putting on apparel. Now, it doesn't mean it's wrong to curl your hair or wear jewelry. If that's the case, it's wrong to put on apparel. So that should not be the outstanding feature about you. But let it be the hidden man of the heart. I wish I had time to teach on that. And that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. I'm sorry that we generally think that the teaching on marriage in this chapter ends with that verse. It does not end with that verse. I don't have a Scofield Bible with me, but I think if you have one, you'll notice that it ends there and starts a new paragraph. It does not start a new paragraph there because the word finally is there. It's concluding what's we've already read. And this is already, it's still about marriage. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love his brethren, be pitiful. Some of you women do a good job of that. Be courteous, not rendering evil for evil, or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. The word pitiful there would be sympathy and empathy, probably wrapped up in one package. You could call it compassion, be compassionate. Have pity, if you please, is what it means. And our Father, I believe tonight that a lot of these young couples especially can be helped tremendously. I pray you'd help me as I teach and these dear ones as they hear. Together may we learn. In Jesus' name, amen. I'm going to ask you, as I always do, not to take notes as I talk. I want you to, I can do more by getting your mind than I can by your notebook, and I'd like for you to listen carefully. I want to help you, and I honestly believe that you will never in your life hear anything that will help your present marriage or your, if you're not married yet, your future marriage than what you'll hear tonight. Listen very carefully. The science of a happy marriage. I'll guarantee what I'm going to teach tonight will work. If you'll try what I'm going to teach tonight, I promise you it'll work. You young ladies and young men in college, it's just a matter of a few years. Well, some of you, a few decades, until you get married. Most of you in college right now, within 5 years, will desperately need what you're going to hear tonight. And all of you who are married, and especially those of you who are younger, I there's no way that I could put a measure of importance for what I'm going to tell you tonight. In a sense, this relationship, have I prayed yet? The second time? Okay, I just want to be sure. I pray so much it's hard for you to know when I pray and when I don't. But in a sense, this relationship of marriage, you will see in a few moments, is to be all of the other relationships, positive relationships of life, wrapped up in one package. We're going to use several passages tonight, and I think I can show you some things that will help you. Take your Bibles and turn to 1 Peter chapter 3 again, would you please? 1 Peter chapter 3. Let me be very simple in my first point, but I think I'm certainly not doing an injustice to the Scripture. Verse 1 of 1 Peter chapter 3. Read that. Read verses 1 and 2 out loud with me, please. Ready? Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may be, without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. Now, the first thing I want to say tonight is that listen to me now, a married couple should be first and foremost conversationalist. Now, I'm aware of what this word means in the Greek, and I'm aware it means more than just verbalizing. But it does also mean verbalizing. It is the entire spectrum of communication, if you please. Sometimes it's translated behavior, but it does include conversation and verbalizing. Now, that means a husband and wife should be conversationalists. I don't care how many couples you talk to where there's a third party that enters in. They always say, we could talk to each other. We could talk to each other. Now, husbands and wives ought to be able to talk to each other. Now, three things under that. First place under that, you ought to be well-read. Well-read. I think that it's a tragedy when couples have nothing to converse about. I think that a couple ought to be able to talk about the Somalia problem. I think a couple ought to be able to talk about the Russia situation. I think a couple ought to be able to talk about the health care that President Clinton and her husband are trying to put over in America. I know that couples ought to be able to converse. Now, I'm going to review just a tad, a little bit on tonight, but I'm going to say, secondly, not only well-read, but a couple should, a wife should be versed in her husband's interest, and a husband should be versed in his wife's interest. Whatever your wife is interested in, for example, let's suppose a husband is interested in football. The wife ought to learn something about football. Let's suppose a wife is interested in flowers. The husband should learn something about football. And I'm just trying to be fair now and honest about this thing. But you should earn others' interest. Now, the first thing I said is that the husband and wife should be conversationalists. Say that out loud. Ready? Conversationalists. Say it again. Conversationalists. Under that, I said you should be well-read. And by the way, down in verse 7, I'll not turn to it right now, but down in verse 7 of 1 Peter 3, it says dwell with the wife according to knowledge. And I'm not sure all that word knowledge means, but I think it means knowledge. And but also, number 3, I said well-read, learn each other's interest. And number 3, that means that the husband and wife should be apart sometime in order to gain or gather conversation material. I've done this before, and I'll not do it again. But a husband and wife are here, and the husband goes this way and goes to work maybe, and the wife has some activities of her own, and they come back together, And she tells him what she's been doing, and he tells her what he's been doing, and they have some conversation. I say that time apart should be time of gathering conversation to bring back to the family and to the marriage. And first, they should be conversationalists. Don't forget that now. Okay, what's the first thing that husband and wife ought to be? Say it. Conversationalists. Say it again. Conversationalists. All right. Now, the second thing, look at 1 Peter chapter 3 once again, would you please? 1 Peter chapter 3. And we were down in verse number 7. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Now notice this. Talking about husband and wife now. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Look at this next three words. Love as brethren. Love as brethren. Now the word finally connects it to the first seven verses, which, listen to me, which deal with marriage. Now, so it says love as brethren. All right, a husband and wife should not only be conversationalists, but they should also be like brothers and sisters. So, I have the second thing, a brother and sister relationship. Now listen, the more relationships that you can have with your wife, the more likely you are to stay together. And the more likely you are to be happy. And the more different relationships you can have with your husband. Look, you can't just smooch all the time. Well, maybe 20, 90% of the time, but you've got to do something sometime besides smooch. And but I'm saying that there must be something else to fall back on. I'll get to that after a while. But so the first thing is, you should be well-read, and you should learn each other's interests, and you should have interests apart from each other, and not totally control each other, in order that when you do get together, you can be conversationalists, all right? First thing a husband and wife should be is what? Conversationalists. And second is what? Like what? A brother and a sister. I suppose first one is what? Conversationalist. Second is what? Brother and sister. Now, what does it mean? I have a sister, only one sister here. I have two in heaven. I have one here. She's in the choir. She's about 35 years older than I am, so I don't know her real well. No, she's 8 years older than I am. And my sister, now here's the way I feel toward my sister. Bitterness. I feel protective of my sister. Any good brother feels the same way. You feel protective of your sister. If my sister is in trouble, I want to be there to help her. If my sister has a heartache, I want to be there to comfort her. If my sister has an enemy, I want to be there to defend her. If my sister is in need, I want to be there to help support her. To me, the brother-sister relationship is one of the strongest support relationships that there is. Now, I'm saying, God is saying, that there ought to be a relationship with the husband and wife that is like a brother and sister relationship. Don't you see where I'm going tonight? I'm saying that I'm going to give you seven different relationships that husbands and wives ought to have. So if one is weak, the other can pick up the relationship. And so the brother and sister relationship. All right, what's the first relationship that husband and wife ought to have? You tell me. Anybody home? Say it again. Conversationalist. And second, the relationship of a brother and sister. All right, number three. Look at Mark chapter 5 and verse 19. What are y'all laughing about? Something wrong with the PA, fellas. Hey, PA man. Something wrong with the PA here. Was anybody? Did you hear God's voice? I just heard from heaven. Is it okay now? Let me ask you a question. Which speaker were you enjoying the most? I'll step aside. We'll both listen to God if you want to. But, all right. So, that okay now? All right. So, now then, Mark chapter 5 and verse 19. Mark chapter 5 and verse 19. I want you to look at it and read it out loud with me, please, in a moment. Mark 5, 19. Ready? Howbeit, Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, Go home to thy friends, and tell him how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and hath had compassion on thee. All right? Now, I want you to notice that little line, Go home to thy friends. go home to thy friends. Now, normally, we don't think about friends as being at home. But the Bible said, go home to thy friends. Or look at me now. Maybe he's talking about go home to thy brother and sister who are your friends. But every home doesn't have a brother and sister. Maybe he's saying go home to your mom and dad. But every home doesn't have a mom and dad. Maybe it means go home to your son or daughter. But every household doesn't have a son or daughter. But every household, God intent for there to be a husband and wife. So, who are to be your, go home to thy friends. And who are your friends? Listen to me now. Listen to me now. No talking. Go home to your brother who is your friend. Go home to your sister who is your friend. Go home to your mother who is your friend. Go home to your father who is your friend. Go home to your son who is your friend. Go home to your daughter who is your friend. But by all means, since every home is supposed to have a husband and a wife, then more than any other relationship, you'll find more husbands and wives at home than you will sons and daughters, or more homes that have husbands and wives than you will sons and daughters, and more homes that have husbands and wives in the same household than you'll have mothers and fathers, and more households that have husbands and wives at home than you'll have brothers and sisters in one household. So what I'm telling you is this. Not only should a husband and wife be conversationalist and be like a brother and a sister, but husbands and wives should be best friends. All right, and I'm talking about friends in the strictest sense of the word. Now, what you ought to do is get your Cruden's Concordance, look up the word friend, and find what friends are supposed to be in the Bible. And that's what husband and wife are supposed to be, because you're supposed to be friends. All right, follow me carefully. The first relationship that husband and wife are supposed to have is the relationship of what? Talk to me. What is it? Conversationalist. And the second relationship of a brother and a sister. And the third relationship is that of friends. First is what? Second is what? Third is what? Friends. All right? That means that you ought to treat your wife like you would treat a sister. That means you ought to treat your husband like you would treat a brother. That means you ought to treat your husband and wife like you would treat a delightful conversationalist. And it means that you ought to treat your husband and wife like you would treat a friend. You ought to be as kind and courteous to your husband and wife as you would be to a friend. And the friend relationship ought to exist. All right? Now, the fourth one. Look at Ephesians chapter 5, please. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse number 25. Ephesians 5, 25. Read that out loud, please. Ready? Husbands, love your wives. Start again, please. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. Now, look at Titus chapter 2. Keep your Bibles open to Ephesians 5. Then look at Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2. And I want you to read the fourth verse out loud, please. The fourth verse. Titus 2, 4. Ready? That they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children. All right, look at me. This is somewhat review. God says, husbands, love your wives. Then he says to the older women, teach the younger women to love their husbands. Now, I taught you this before. The word love in Ephesians 5:25 is the word agape, which means deep love. The word love in Titus 2:4 is the word phileo, which means affectionate love. So God is saying to the husbands, and boy, I think this is so important. God is saying to the husbands, you love your wife with a deep agape love. And God is saying to wives, you love your husbands with an affectionate love. Now why? Because affection is easier usually for a man than it is for a woman. And God says to the man, I want you to deeply love your wife. But a deep abiding love is easier for a woman than it is for a man. And so God said to her, I want you to be affectionate to your husband. God knew that probably the husband would need to be reminded more to agape his wife. He knew the wife would probably need to be reminded more to phileo her husband. And so God is simply saying, well, husbands, you deeply love your wives, and wives, you be affectionate to your husbands. Now, number four is lovers. Lovers. I have number four, lovers devotedly. lovers devotedly. That's agape love. Now, don't misunderstand me. The husband's supposed to be affectionate to the wife. But it's I'll guarantee you this. Of the counseling I do, and you preachers have vouched for this, the marital counseling we do, 95% of the cases where one is affectionate and the other is not, the husband is the more affectionate. A woman is stirred to affection if she receives agape love. A man is stirred to agape love if he receives affection. So God said to the woman, if you want to have agape love, you be affectionate to your husband. And man, if you want to have affectionate love, then you have agape love to your wife. So the fourth thing is lovers devotedly. Say that. Lovers devotedly. And that's what kind of love? Agape love. Say it. Lovers devotedly. Say it again. Lovers devotedly. Say it again. Lovers devotedly. And that's what kind of love? Agape love. All right. Now, so far we have four different relationships that husband and wife should have. One is what? Talk to me. What? Conversationalist. Two, like a brother and a sister. Three, like friends. And four, lovers devotedly. Or what kind of love? Agape love. Number five, lovers romantically. Lovers romantically. That's number five. And that's phileo, or affection, or something that the senses love. I love chocolate cake. I love banana splits. I love cheese quarter pounders. Don't eat any anymore since I got so cute. But you phileo cheese quarter pounders. You phileo your wife to kiss you. You phileo her to hug you. that's a sensuous. I don't mean that in the sense of being wicked. An appetite kind of a love, if you please. It appeals to the eyes. It appeals to the ears. It appeals to the smell. It appeals to the taste. It appeals to the physical senses. Now, that's romantic love. Now, I'm not going to ask you to turn to it because of time. But I want to read for you about the romantic love. And I'm just going to read it. Not going to teach it. Just going to read it. Listen carefully. Now, concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. This guy went and asked for the pastor's daughter's hand in marriage. And he said, I want to marry your daughter. And the pastor said, son, if you marry my daughter, you're going to have to be scriptural. Give me a scripture. He said, Solomon said, whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing. And the pastor said to his prospective son-in-law, but Paul said it's good for a man not to touch a woman. What you going to say to that? And the prospective son-in-law said, I think Solomon knew more about women than Paul did. He had 1,000. Paul had none. And he got the woman, by the way. But let me keep on reading now. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication. I want you to notice that, ladies. To avoid fornication. Now I'm not going to teach this, but I want you to notice that's one reason why. To avoid fornication. Let every man have his own wife. Every woman have her own husband. I'm just going to read it to you. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power or authority of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud or cheat ye not one the other, except it be with consent for a season, that ye may give yourself to fasting and prayer, and come together again, let Satan tempt you not. Now, that's all I'm going to say about that. But I'm not saying it. Paul said it, and God said it. But I'm simply saying that's the fifth relationship. Now, don't miss these. The first relationship. We're trying to get as many things going for us as we can. And the more things you got going for you, the more likely you are to make it. All right? First relationship is what? Conversationalist. Say it out loud. Ready? Conversationalist. Then we're also supposed to have a second relationship, like a brother and a sister. And then the third relationship we're supposed to have is like what? Friends. And the fourth relationship, lovers, how? Devotedly. Say it. Lovers devotedly. Say it again. Lovers devotedly. Say it again. Lovers devoted. First, second, third, fourth, fifth, lovers romantically. So you have the five relationships now. The more things you got going for you, the better chance you're going to have. So you got these five things. Number six, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. Very interesting verse. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse number 8. All of these verses now, verses 1 through 9 at least, are talking about marriage. I'm going to go back to verse 7 so you can tie it together. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them, that's the wives, according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, and be courteous. The best word I can tell you for that word courteous is be a good host. Be a good host. That means that a husband is supposed to be a host to his wife. And the wife is supposed to be a hostess to her husband. That means that when your husband comes home, you're supposed to treat him as if some company came. How would you treat him if treat company if they came? Listen, every single command as to how Christians are supposed to treat each other should go home with us. And every husband should be a host, treat his wife like a host would treat a guest in the household. Be courteous. I won't turn to it, but 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 6, it says Sarah called Abraham Lord. Now that doesn't mean he was her God. The word Lord there was a word like we would say sir. She would say, sir, courtesy, if you please. Listen, every husband ought to treat his wife with the same courtesy inside the walls of your house as you treat any other female guest that came to your house. And every man ought to treat his wife just like he would treat some other woman that came to visit your house. Courtesy, common courtesy. And manners, if you please. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think every marriage ought to have a formality to it. I don't think that husbands ought to be slouchy around the house. I don't think they'll run around the house in their shorts and undershirts and lay on the sofa watching a ball game half naked, and the wife should not run around the house half naked. I think there ought to be a certain kind of a propriety. Hey, that's one reason why you get tired of each other. You get tired of each other because you see each other too informally. But there ought to be a certain kind of an intrigue and a mystique inside a marriage that's caused by proper courtesy, if you please. All right, the word is host and hostess. Host and hostess. Say it. Host and hostess. Now, I'm trying to show you tonight the different relationships that a husband and wife ought to have with each other. First, what was the first one? Conversationalist. Say it. Conversationalist. Second, we should treat each other as a brother and a sister. And thirdly, we should treat each other as friends. And fourthly, we should treat each other as lovers devotedly. Say it. Lovers devotedly. Say it again. Lovers devotedly. And fifthly, we treat each other as lovers romantically. Say it again. Lovers romantically. Say it again. Lovers romantically. Listen, I promise you this. If you'll go home and treat your young wife or your young husband or your old codger for that matter, if you'll treat that pretty girl you got in your house, that young fellow you got in your house, if you'll be good conversationalist, hear me now, and like a brother and like a sister. Now I want to say this. You don't go around, fellas, pinching on your sister all the time. You don't go around with only one thing in mind all the time. With your wife either. You treat your wife, your husband and wife, treat each other like conversationalists, talk to each other, enjoy conversing, then treat each other like a brother and a sister, and then treat each other like good friends, and then treat each other like lovers devotedly, and then treat each other like lovers romantically, and then hosts and hostess. All right? And number 7, look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 2. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 2. Read that out loud, please. 2 Corinthians 11, 2. Ready? For I am jealous, start it again. For I am jealous over you with godly jealousy. Are we reading the same verses here? Okay, let's try it again. For I am jealous over you with godly jealousy. For I have espoused you to one husband. Let me stop right there. That word espoused is the word partner. I have partnered you with one husband. To be espoused means to be joined
as partners, as in a business, Jones and Smith Incorporated. I have espoused you, he said. The Bible uses the word espoused. Mary and Joseph were espoused. Now that means, I think, and if that's not what that teaches, it's still a good idea, husbands and wives ought to be partners. Partners. Let me ask you again to turn to Ephesians 5:21. Ephesians 5:21. To me, one of the most important verses in all the Bible concerning marriage. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. All right, look at me. That means that the husband is to submit himself to the wife. Is that true? Submitting yourself one to another. That means the wife is supposed to submit herself to the husband. Is that true? All right, now then. The first command is for the wife to submit herself to the husband. And if the wife submits herself to the husband then is at liberty, when he so chooses, to submit himself to the wife. If I know Brother Colson is going to submit himself to me as my associate pastor and as I being his pastor, then I in turn can say, Brother Colson, what do you think? And sometimes I will say, you're more versed on this than I am, and I'll let you make that decision. I say this to all these men here. We have our meetings on Saturdays, our staff meetings and administrative meetings. I often say to Dr. Jorgensen, Dr. Evans, I'll say, you fellows make this decision. You know more about that than I do. Now, I can do that because I know they will submit to me if I so choose. You see? So, no husband's supposed to be the dictator of his wife. The wife is supposed to say, I'll do what you say, enabling the husband then to retain his leadership and retain his integrity as a husband and say, I'd like your advice too. And in some cases, the husband should submit himself to what the wife thinks is the best. I taught you this not long ago. I taught you that it's best for husbands and wives not to make decisions together. It's best for the wife to have certain areas of responsibility. Some of you husbands, you want to tell your wife where to put the furniture. You want to tell your wife what to cook for supper. Well, give her some area of responsibility. Oh, you say I'm the boss. You can be a boss and delegate responsibility. You can delegate a authority and still be the boss. So submitting yourself one or the other. All right, now, that means as partners. As partners, Brother Colston, you and Elaine will be partners. And as partners, that means you're on the same, you're team members, and that means that you submit yourselves one to the other. The wife, of course, always doing it first. And any form of leadership, it's the same way. If the follower will obey first and submit himself, that gives the leader room to submit himself when he so chooses. All right? Set up straight. What's the first relationship husband-wife ought to have? All right, and you get that by being well read, you get that by being interested in other, being knowledgeable about the other's interests, and you get that by being apart some, so you can get apart, gather conversation, bring it back, and conversationalist. Secondly, a husband and wife ought to be like a brother and a sister, and that's a very possessive thing, and that's where you ought to be as husband and wife. Thirdly, you ought to be as what? Friends and. And in the strictest sense, the truest sense, I'm not talking about we're just friends. That's silly. You can't be just friends. The word friends, one of the strongest words in the entire Bible. Read my book, Deuteronomy, sometime, and you'll find something about the strength and the solidity of the word friend. So, we're to be conversationalists, brother and sister, friends. Then, what's the fourth one? What? Lovers, devotedly. Lovers devoted it. And God says to the husband, love his wife how? What word? Agape. Deep, abiding love. Lovers devotedly. First is what? Anybody home? First is what? Second is what? Third is what? Fourth is what? Fifth is what? Lovers romantically. And that goes to the wife. Now follow me carefully. In that respect, the wife is supposed to sort of lead. You said, wait a minute, Brother Hiles.
I'm not supposed to lead romantically. Then why do you put that perfume behind your ear? Why do you paint that face up? Look so pretty? You're supposed to let your husband know that you're interested. And lovers romantically. All right? Then the next one is what? Number six? Host and hostess. Say it. Host and hostess. Say it. Host. And that means you're supposed to be real what around the house? Courteous and kind and gracious. Like you're hosting a friend. Brother Stansel is hosting Brother Wallace. And I think, I've watched how he does it. Brother Wallace comes in the room, he says, "Hello there, Chris." Chris says, "What you want?" Brother Wallace says, could I have a cup of coffee?" Chris says, "Go get it yourself." He says, "Look, could you drive me somewhere?" Brother Chris says, "I'm not your servant." He's cared for his every need. Our hosts around here, when they host a guest, you wives are to host your husband just like Keith McKinney hosted Dr. and Mrs. D. Robertson last week. And you husbands are supposed to host your wives the same way. Folks, you listen to me. You young couples getting married, you love letters. I can't wait till I can touch you. Won't you say, how about this for a Gucci Gucci letter? I can't wait till I can host you. I can't wait till we can have the opportunity to be real friends. Every wife, hear me, every wife has a perfect right to feel the protection a sister would feel from a brother. And every wife has a perfect right to feel that she's more than just a body, that she is a human being with a mind and ability to converse, and that her husband likes to converse with her. And every wife has a perfect right to feel like she is a friend and he is her friend. And every wife has a right to feel like she is loved devoted. I was counseling with a couple. I mean, I had worked so hard to get that couple together. I'd had a half a dozen heavy counseling sessions. I'm talking about hour and a half, and I was making no progress at all. And all of a sudden, I said to him, I was about to give up. I said, "Look at her." I said, "Look at her." He looked at her. I said, "You married her when she was a teenage girl. You took that little thing right there from her parents. You took her from her brothers and sisters. You took her from her home. You took her from her own room. You took her from her church. You took her from her friends." Now I said, "Look at her. She's fragile. If you get in a fight with her, she hadn't got a chance." I said, "Look at her." And there you are treating her like you treat her. You ought to be treating her like you treat a little fragile piece of china. And all of a sudden, I saw something come over his face. And he said, "Preacher, that does it. That does it." It's been several years. That woman tells me that she is treated as carefully and fragilely as if she were a fragile little piece of china. Now, I'm simply saying, all of these different relationships simply give you insurance. So if one is weak all of a sudden, there are others that come into view. And then, of course, partners. Now, most important thing I won't tell you in all these lessons on marriage is right now. You choose as a couple, before you get married, listen carefully, you choose someone who knows you're not perfect, who will not be disappointed when they find out you're not perfect, who knows that no one has the perfect marriage, not even you, who is knowledgeable, and who will keep it confidential. Anytime, hear me carefully now, anytime any one of these seven things is ill, you go to that person. That person may be, listen to me, that person may be a mom or a dad. That person may be a friend. That person may be a sister or brother. That person may be a pastor or an assistant pastor. But every couple in the world needs to keep the conversational piece healthy, the brother and sister relationship healthy, the friend relationship healthy, the lover's devotedly relationship healthy, the lover's romantically relationship healthy, the host relationship healthy, and the partner relationship healthy. And if any of them is ill, there needs to be somebody that you have pre-agreed to go to. Illustration. I married two young couples within a month of each other, maybe within a week or two. I think I may have told this. One was a very fine couple, college people, very, very refined couple, from an upper middle class family. The other couple was what we'd call socially lower middle class, though I don't like that word lower on anybody. They're no lower class people unless you choose to be that way by your lifestyle. But financially, they were below middle class. And they were not college people. And they were a little bit what down south we'd call hillbilly-like. I told both of them, listen carefully. I said, when you get married, you choose somebody that you agree on to whom you can go. Now, wait a minute, to whom you can go. And you, if you are ill, if your marriage is ill, you go to them within 10 days, maybe a week or two, at least, no more than 2 weeks. The hillbilly couple bounced in and said, Brother Jack, we have a problem. And it was a physical problem. It was lovers romantically problem. I picked up the telephone. I called the doctor. They went down to the doctor, and there was an outpatient surgery performed in the doctor's office that cured the whole thing, and they've been on a honeymoon ever since. The other couple, the high-class couple, were too ritzy to admit they had a problem. They had exactly the same problem the first couple had. They never came in. 7 years later, they're about to get a divorce, and they came in for counseling. Listen, I found out they had the same problem since they got married, this hillbilly couple had. They were 7 years lived with intention, unhappiness, and divorce was imminent. What was the difference? Couple number one came within 2 weeks. Couple number two waited 7 years. Now listen carefully. Choose someone you can go to. Someone who's knowledgeable about marriage. Someone who knows you're not perfect and doesn't expect you to have the perfect marriage and knows that nobody does. And somebody who will keep it confidential. Now listen carefully. Number two, when any one relationship is in the slightest trouble, you go to them. And number three, never, 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 never tell anybody else. Don't go to your son or daughter and tell them about your marital problem. All in the world you can get is sympathy and try to win them to your side, but you can't get counseling your son or daughter. I tell our college students, they come to my office and they say, Brother Hiles, my mom and dad are having trouble. What can I do? I say, nothing. Stay out of it. Stay out of it. You're not qualified to do marital counseling. Don't go to your mom and dad and tell them your problems in marriage unless that's mom or dad is the one chosen to be the one to go to. Only go to that one person. Ladies, I'm going to tell you something about men. Every man here agrees with this. There's nothing a man hates than for his wife to discuss his weaknesses with a friend. More than that, nothing. For your husband to find out that you've been discussing the intimacies of your marriage with a friend is more distasteful to him than most anything in the world. Now, let me just review. And this will work. You be conversationalist, brother, sister, friends, lovers devotedly, lovers romantically, hosts, and partners. And when any of those is weak, go to the person that has been chosen beforehand and let that person do what they can to help you. There's never been in the history of our country an attack on the home like there is today. Practically every one of the battles we're fighting with the liberals today is over the home. The ERA, NOW Hussies, the devil's attacking the home. Abortion, devil's attacking the home. The gay rights, making parents, adopting parents out of queers. I'm saying almost all of our liberal battles over the home. And of course, marriage is the foundation of the home. I promise you, young couples, you listen to me. I promise you, if you will decide to be conversationalists and brothers and sisters and friends and lovers devotedly and lovers romantically and courteous hosts and partners, and if you'll have that person to whom you can go that you agreed on previously when any of these is ill and go to no one else, I promise you that 95 to 99% of all the problems in your marriages will be cured. Shall we stand, please?